Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope. It's the only show that's part of this complete breakfast. I'm your announcer, Tony Partington. Coming up on this edition of The Scope...
All right, Jared and myself, Shane, we're back with another Scope Summer Movie Slam Super Sneak Preview review of a movie, Jared, that does not come out for how many months?
Well, at the time this is recorded, we're over 3 months in advance.
Yeah. So we don't know when we'll kick it off there, but the movie we're talking about is The To-Do List. It's a coming-of-age summer type flick, comedy romp.
One would think this is your exact type of film that you love.
This would fall in. Well, I mean, okay, so let's talk about what this film is.
Yep.
First of all, if you star in an NBC program or an ABC sitcom, you are probably in this film. You've got Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Rec,
Donald Glover from Community, Bill Hader from SNL. Who else? Andy Samberg, formerly of SNL.
Yep. You've got Connie Britton from Friday Night Lights, and you've got the kid in the wheelchair from Friday Night Lights, which I don't remember his...
Jason Street. We'll call him Jason Street.
Jason Street is in this.
You've got Agent Coulson from The Avengers.
Yes.
Clark Gregg.
You've got...
In one of my favorite roles in the film.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got all these people in a super... when you think of funny people, this, I think, would... You would agree this movie is loaded for bear. I mean, you've got
the middle child. Yeah. Youngest child from Modern Family.
Yeah. And you've got the guy from who was in Iron Man 3, who is in Modern Family.
Okay.
Plays the character Max. So you got a guy from Modern Family plays Max. Is that his name?
He's
like a little kid. And you've got the guy from Happy Endings that plays Max as well.
Crazy.
So it's almost like all these guys are off on their summer break from their sitcoms.
Indeed.
And they're going to come and film this movie.
That's pretty much what happened.
The movie is, I'm going to call it the girl power version of American Pie. It's essentially what it is. It's the American Pie formula flipped. You've got a stick in the butt girl played by Aubrey, which her name is, I don't remember her name in the movie.
It's Brandi Clark.
She's
graduating. She's valedictorian of the high school.
Highest GPA in the history.
She's a big old nerdy virgin, if you will.
She's got a couple of slutty friends.
Mm-hmm. Actually, was it her sister? I don't remember.
Her sister, Rachel.
Rachel Bilson.
Bilson, yep.
Basically, she's told that you need to lose your virginity by college because college is a big old sexual experimentation and period, and you need to come in prepared with some knowledge. And so our heroine sets herself to task.
In a very much election pick flick sort of scene, she goes and she makes a big, long spreadsheet done by hand.
Yep, Inner Trapper Keeper. Oh, she also mentioned this takes place in 1993.
The summer of 1993, almost in itself plays its own character. It's definitely a character in the film, and we'll get to that later. But she makes a spreadsheet of all these weird sexual things which she doesn't understand, and then she's going to go through the summer and make sure that she checks these off the
very
list.
Very academically.
Yep. And at the bottom of the list is having sex with the hot... college boy
who works at the pool,
played by Jason Street, likes to take off her shirt. He's got abs. I put those in air quotes. At the same time, she's got a nerdy best friend kid who's really not that nerdy, but he dresses a lot like
study buddy.
He dresses a lot like Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
His name's Cameron.
Cameron.
Well, he was as referred to as Growing Pains at one point.
Or Mutant Zach from. And anyway, so it's really sort of a disjointed story of her going from sexual escapade to sexual escapade, which, of course, for a young virgin girl who doesn't know what they are, never ends up well. And isn't McLovin in that as well?
Yes.
McLovin also playing almost McLovin, but without a catchphrase.
He doesn't have a lot of range.
No. So, the story of...
But just the thing, as the two movies we've now seen week to week have had McLovin and have had the guy from the Sonic commercials. I can't remember his name, but...
He's a character actor
small
everywhere.
Small little bit roles. Yeah. Those are the glue that binds these films together.
Often found on the Best Week Ever on VH1.
Sure.
That's sort of... I can't remember his name. But, so anyway, it's a movie that's got a lot of sexual humor, which is very, very supposed to be very, very crude, like American Pie or something about Mary. But at the same time, it, of course, it's got that little heart, that little bit of heart where, you know, these are lessons we can learn and we can love our parents.
A very small amount of heart.
Yeah. I think it's
This is a first-time writer-director, by the way.
Yeah.
So.
Apparently based on a book and starring the Hollywood elites, according to the KDWB DJ that introduced the film.
Right.
Hollywood elite.
Yeah. Well, there was no Aziz, so it can't be elite.
Yes. So that is essentially the movie. If you've seen American Pie, I mean, this movie is so American Pie that it actually uses American Pie's theme song as the culmination of the big sex scene. So
I missed that.
Yes,
okay.
She only comes when she's on top.
Sure.
That is right out of American Pie. And this movie actually doesn't take place too much earlier than American Pie, just a matter of years. So it's a retro American Pie movie when there probably shouldn't be a retro American Pie movie. Okay, so...
So the effects were great. No,
so we, and the movie is definitely a budget film. I mean, there's not a lot. It's a comedy, but it's definitely filmed on the cheap, at least in my opinion. Maybe done as a lot of these actors done as a favor to the writer and director. I don't know. So, Jared, here's my quick opinion.
Yes.
When you have this many funny people in a movie or this many talented people, you have to give them material to work with that isn't derivative and, frankly, is not funny. And I mean, this, if you listen to our summer movie preview, this was on my list as a dark horse movie for me to see, and I was really looking forward to it. And I have to say, I am so let down by it that I don't even know what to tell you.
I think if I had to sum it up in one word, the word would be clumsy.
Extremely clumsy.
There isn't a lot of polish to the writing, and it really feels like a first-time director's film. And maybe in a more experienced director's hands, it might have come off a little more deft, a little more subtle when it needed to be subtle, more boundary pushing when it needed to ride the razor's edge. But it just felt clumsy. It felt, you know, it felt kind of safe when you really wanted it to kind of push some buttons a little bit, maybe. And I agree. I was disappointed.
There was nothing. I mean, you have comedians in this film who are known for weird, quirky shit.
Yeah.
And none of the people in this, or people that can act and do really deep, heavy things, and none of the material suited them. I mean, everything was by the book, by the American Pie book, and I don't like to keep going back to it, but it was like, I want to write American Pie for girls. That's the pitch in the meeting. That's what the pitch is.
You're probably not wrong. It feels... It's real easy to, I think, to draw a contrast to This Is the End, which we saw last weekend.
Sure.
I don't know when these are going to be released, so our reviews, they're probably going to be weeks apart, months apart, who knows. But if you look at that film, it's, you know, a very similar group of actors, but I felt like in This Is the End, they were probably giving a lot of leeway to improvise and kind of find moments and play with scenes a little bit more. I feel like in this one, I don't know the director. I don't know if she has what her take was or what her process is. I don't know. But I felt like there probably wasn't much, if any, improvisation on the to-do list. So all you're left with is the material that's on the page. And given the fact that it's supposedly based on her real-life experiences, I'm not surprised that if there wasn't any improv, it makes sense. But unfortunately, what you're left with is a script and a film that really doesn't do anything interesting or fresh.
Yeah. I mean,
there are moments, but overall.
And it's mostly Bill Hader, for the most part, for the comedy, where he might get a few minutes to go off script, or maybe it's in script and they got lucky and they hit a joke. But the story in this, I mean, the ultimate lesson that you're supposed to take from this is that sex should not be stigmatized, from a woman's point of view, should not be stigmatized and not should be elevated to some mystical mystical pedestal.
Right.
It should be something that you can enjoy, and sometimes it means something, sometimes it doesn't, but not to get so wrapped up in it. Which, I mean, you learn that by them telling you at the end. I mean, it's not like you don't learn it, you don't really see that through experience, because everything is so awkwardly handled.
Yeah. And I can understand that taking that angle and sort of empowering women to take control of their own sexual destiny. But at the same time, you've got the best friends reconciling while singing The Wind Beneath My Wings from Beaches.
Yes.
Which I don't know if that undermines the point or not, but it just seems... That seemed just like we're going to put something that's a cultural touchstone from the period.
Yeah.
And use that to tell our story for.
Well, let's talk about cultural touchstones. So the movie takes place in 1993.
Yep.
And sometimes when you do a retro movie like this, the time period is simply just the place in which these people exist, and they just sort of operate within that. And sometimes it's turned into more of an active participant in the film. This movie was definitely the latter. So, I mean, if you want to draw a comparison to another movie that took place in 1993, Perks of Being a Wallflower, which is one of our favorite movies of the year, that movie was not completely accurate to 1993, but yet it felt organic to the story. This movie, it didn't. It was not organic. And I'm, you know...
It felt a little bit like an excuse to get people dressed up in shitty 1993 fashion.
We're going to dress Donald Glover in Kid and Play.
Yeah.
We're going to have Trapper Keepers, which nobody used in 1993.
And, well, the entire opening credit sequence was all zooming around the main character's bedroom and showing off all of these pieces of 1993 culture, you know, whether it's Trapper Keepers or cassette tapes or, you
when it's not necessarily the culture of the time. And I get it, you know, it's comedy, but, you know, if you're going to do it, if you're going to really go for it, then stay true to it. You know, people didn't wear hypercolor shirts in 1993. There are things like that, and they made it a point to make it a big joke.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna do it, get it right. That's how I feel about it. And it felt it's another thing in this movie that felt forced. Wouldn't it have been funny if it just would have been part of what they were doing? You know, if it was just there. I mean,
just wasn't called attention to.
Yeah, like I mean, McLovin gets a page, which was kind of funny. I mean, that was sort of funny. It was just like there. It was. You know, it was subtly handled as much as it could. And, you know, you also have to understand that a lot of people that see this movie might be younger than us, so they didn't live through it. And there were jokes that clearly went over the head of people in the audience, which I know that you and I sort of, like, laughed in our heads.
Sure.
And we didn't vocalize. We're like, we get where they're going. We're going with it. But, you know, you got to be able to handle that and know your audience, too. You know, you can't... It's almost like... you know, a kid watching Yo Gabba Gabba, not understanding half the jokes, but the parents sort of do, but the people in the middle don't get it.
I think it comes down to the person running the show is a first-time director and just isn't prepared to bring that kind of depth to it.
Yeah, to me, and I agree with you, my biggest issue is that it follows a template that we've seen over and over again. It follows a template that was popular in late 90s and early 2000 movies, and there's a reason why those movies sort of went away.
Yeah.
You know, like when we went to see American Reunion.
Just didn't have the charm.
It didn't have the
magic anymore.
You didn't feel it. And I felt like that when I was watching this movie, except more disappointed because the people in this movie are funnier.
Yeah.
And they're better.
And I feel like the talent was wasted. I also have issues with the characterization of Brandi Clark. As played by Aubrey Plaza, in that she's so detached and so academic about everything that she almost seems robotic.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to relate to her and her journey.
I completely agree with you.
It's definitely funny at times, that sort of take on it, but it just, if you're trying to have an emotional core to your story, to have her so... detached and unemotional, just damage to it. You're not bringing your audience in at all. First time director, not really hitting a home run here.
And let's talk about Aubrey for one second.
Yeah.
She has a very specific comedic persona.
Yeah.
Like, she has a type, and this sort of played, I don't even know if this tried to capture that type or not. I don't really know. But it just did not feel like it worked for her.
Yeah, I mean, her type is... She was playing the same sort of type, but in this context, it doesn't work.
And maybe...
She needs to be... The character needs to be a little bit more, I guess, mature and sure of herself and what her position is in the world.
Yeah.
And this character just isn't there yet. So, the Aubrey Plaza style that she has just sort of feels out of place.
Didn't work here. I think we've given this a good take, you know...
I liked Clark Gregg. I thought he was funny in his moments.
I even felt like he was misused as the dad. You know, here's a dad that doesn't like his daughter having sex. How many times can we see the parents walk in with them having sex and how uncomfortable?
It's a trope, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think he does a decent job with what he's given to do.
Well, he's a very likable guy.
Right.
It's just there's no meat there. You know, and then Connie Britton as the mom is sort of like the dad from American Pie.
Yeah.
I mean,
pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's,
you're absolutely right. I hadn't even figured out that parallel. Jim's dad.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, you know, like
it's
nothing.
All coming into
nothing to
now.
Be embarrassed about and right. blah, blah, blah. But it's okay with the mom because she's a nurse, because she's always wearing scrubs, so she's always talking about sex in a very clinical way, right. and it's okay. It just, you know, it just, everything in this movie didn't quite work. It was like, it's like everything is phase shifted just a little bit to the left.
Clumsy, and off. It didn't come together. I felt like the sound mix was a little weird.
Yeah, in the theater it was really bad.
Yeah.
It was, and that might have been just the nature of the theater, but it was hard to listen to. It sounded like it was a mono yeah. mix.
Maybe, and maybe that's an artifact of us seeing the film 3 months early.
Yeah.
Maybe this version just isn't quite finalized yet. Who knows, but yeah, you're right. Everything just felt a little bit off. I think the summary is clumsy and phase shifted.
There we go. So let's give this thing a scope score.
The scope score is 1.5 star.
So we give this a under average review, below average, as mm-hmm. they would say in the business. Not quite an official Palmer Slam. I think to get Palmer Slam, you have to be under 1.
That's fair.
But awfully close. So we're hoping for an official Palmer Slam at some point during the summer. But disappointing and a big letdown, because I had high hopes that this movie would be a little smarter, a little more clever, and a little less formulaic.
Yeah, I mean, just going through that opening credit sequence and just seeing all the names come up and going, wow, just like one great comedy person after another. I had such high hopes. And yeah, almost immediately I started to feel the problems.
Yes. And there you go. Free movie. That's good.
Yep.
Way ahead of time. We can talk about it.
Yeah, we even wrapped up the review before getting back to your house.
So, everybody, the Scope movie, Scope Summer Movie Slam continues on. Heck, the rate we're going, this might be one of the last movies of the summer that we review. You never know. Or it could be one of the first. You'll just have to find out when we post this
thing. Indeed.
So, salutations and arrivederci, Scope listeners.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com or leave a voicemail message by dialing
612-21-SCOPE. That's 612-217-2673.
Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying arrivederci. Tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.